Well, greetings again in Christ's name. It's good to be here again and see many faces with us again. Here while alone with thee, my strength renew, or we could say our strength renew. I think that's what we're here for God to strengthen us, continue his work in our lives. Well, this evening, another story for to begin with here, especially directed to the children. It says a story of humility, and it's called, the title is simply The Tower. Let's see what we can learn. There was once a young man who desired to be great, but he did not know how to become great. So he went to the oldest man in the small village where he lived, for all trusted the old man and considered him wise. What is it to be great? The young man asked. To be great is to be looked up to, said the old man. The young man considered his words. Then he went home and built himself a platform to stand on. He took his platform to the center of the village and stood on it. Now everyone must look up to me. But not everyone did. That afternoon, a very tall man walked by. I must build a taller platform, he said. He sawed off a bamboo pole and added longer legs to his platform. Now he could see the top of the villagers' heads. Now I am greater than they, he said, looking down on the people. They all must look up to me. Not I, said a small voice. He glanced around. A little girl stared down at him from the window of a pagoda. This will not do, said the young man. What I need is a tower higher than anything ever built in this village. He went to work building his tower. He chopped down the entire forest of trees and dragged them to the top of the hill. He worked long and hard every day from sunrise to late into the night. He did not have time for family or friends or sunset walks along the banks of the river. Whenever someone approached him, he said, "Do not bother me. I'm building a tower." Eventually, everyone stayed away. After many seasons, the young man finished his tower. It stretched high into the air, high above the village. It was taller than the pagoda of dragons, higher even than the emperor's palace in the land to the north. The young man was tired, but he was pleased with his tower. Now everyone must look up to me, he said. I am the greatest man in the land. There was room for only one at the top of his tower, and the young man soon found that he was lonely. But he told himself that it didn't matter, for great men must often walk alone. Besides, he reasoned, why would he want to associate with those much lower than himself? One day, a bird flying by saw the young man on top of the tower. It flew down and lit on his knee. What are you doing up here? The bird asked. Normally, the young man would have sent away such a common bird, but today he was feeling especially lonely and welcomed its company. I am a great man, he said. Is that so? Said the bird. A great man is an uncommon and good thing. I have always wanted to see a great man. Let me take a look at you. The bird flew around the man. Then it landed again on the young man's knee. Excuse me for saying so, but I do not see anything about you that is so different from any other man. What makes you great? The bird asked. The young man smiled smugly. He did not expect the bird to know such things as what makes a man great. Let me explain, he said. I am much higher than everyone else. All must look up to me. He pointed to the people in the village below. See how small they are from here? It would appear so, said the bird. But then, perhaps, from the ground, you appear small to them. For a moment, the man puzzled. Then he said, no matter. I'm above them all. While they crawl around with the animals and work their low fields, I sit high above them in the clouds. You are high indeed, said the bird, and it is a long way to fall. I won't fall, said the man. My tower is strong, the likes of which has never been seen in this kingdom. All towers fall, said the bird, with time. The man ignored the bird's warning. He thought himself much too great to heed the common bird. You may be as great as you say, said the bird, but I know of one who is greater. The man cast his eyes about. Who is this person? She is an old woman. She is far below. She could never climb such a tower, said the bird. But even we birds look up to her. An arrogant grin crossed the man's face. I've caught you in your foolishness. If she is down below, how can she be looked up to? I can't explain it, but it's true, said the bird. This angered the young man. Where will I find this woman? Where the river is at its widest, there is a large rock just right for sitting upon. At sunrise, you will find her there. With that, the bird flew away. The bird's words bothered the man. He decided he must see this woman for himself. He woke up very early the next morning. Before the sun rose above the eastern mountains, he climbed down from his tower. At sunrise, he found the woman where the bird said she would be. To his surprise, she was a very small woman, old and withered. Her clothing were rags and poor. Her clothes were rags and ragged and poor. Still, she was surrounded by flocks of birds, for she took from her own loaf of bread and fed them. "I have heard that you are great," said the man to the old woman. The old woman looked up but did not reply. She broke off another piece of her bread and threw it to the ground. "You cannot be great," said the man. "No one looks up to you except those little birds." "No matter," the old woman replied. The old man puffed out his chest. "What do you know of the great man on the tower? You know of him, of course." "All know of him," said the woman. "Whether he be great or not, I don't know. He is nothing to me, but I pity him." "Pity," cried the man. "How can you pity a man whom all look up to?" "I pity him because I think he must be miserable. He spends his life where it is cold and friendless. In my experience, those who build such towers do not enjoy the climb or the height, but only to be higher than another. Such people must always be lonely." The man replied tersely, "It is a small price to pay for being great." "How do you know that the man is great?" she asked. "Because all can see him, and that makes him great." "Being seen and being great are not the same thing," she said. "I don't understand," said the man. "To be great," said the woman, "is not to be seen by, but to truly see others." The woman threw the last of her bread to the bird. She turned and faced the man. "To be great is not to be higher than another, but to lift another higher." The man thought long and hard about this. "You speak strange things." "Perhaps, but I am too old to lie," she replied. The man turned and walked back to his tower. As he walked, he came to a group of children playing. From his tower, he could not hear the laughter of children, so he stopped to listen to it. Then he noticed a little boy sitting on a branch of a tree apart from the others. The boy looked sad. "Why are you not playing with the others?" the man asked. "I would rather sit above them in this tree," he replied. "But why?" "Because it is better to be above them." He pointed to the man's tower. "Someday I will build a tower like the one on the hill. Then I will be happy." "No," said the man as he turned to leave, "you will not be happy then." The man walked slowly back to his tower and looked at it for a long time. It stretched high above, up to the cold and lonely clouds. He thought about the old woman and the things she had said, and he thought about the little boy in the tree. Then he took an axe and began to chop at the legs of the tower. To his surprise, the tower fell easily with a mighty crash. The man sat down on a rock to think. A villager was walking by and stopped to look at the man and the large pile of tangled wood behind him. "I'm newly married and hope to build my wife a house. I could use some wood," he said. "Help yourself to it," the man said. The new husband began to gather the wood. "Do you need some help building?" the man asked. "I've gotten good at building." The husband smiled. "Thank you. I could use some help." Word of the fallen tower spread throughout the village. There were many in need of wood, and the man shared freely of his tower with all who asked, turning no one away. Some used the wood to build fires to warm themselves and their families. Some made beautiful furniture and carvings. The man even helped a group build a school in the center of the village. The whole village was changed by his gift. As the man delivered up the last of his wood, he overheard one villager saying to another, "Look how freely this man gives. You know what they say of him?" "What is that?" asked the other. "It is said that here is a truly great man." The end. Someone who actually found the secret. Didn't go on living determined to show others wrong, but who listened, surrendered his will, and found the secret to happiness and greatness. Maybe we don't necessarily think we're looking for greatness, but sometimes we find ourselves just thinking we're a little above another and need the lessons of life to teach us, need the Lord's help. If you're ever tempted to think that, just remember that pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before fall. It's the words of God himself, and it will carry out. Well, this evening, if you have your Bibles, turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Felt led to bring a message to the youth this evening. Glad to see a lot of children, a lot of young people here. Been blessed by observing the service and the interest and that we see. And I believe the Bible has a lot of wisdom to share to our youth. Ecclesiastes 11, verse 9, very familiar verse, says, "Rejoice, O young man, or O young woman, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart, and in the sight of thine eyes, but know thou that for all these things God will bring thee into judgment." Sounds very promising, doesn't it? Rejoice. Have a good time. Is that really what he's saying? He does mention the fact that it seems like there's a place for enjoying life. There's a place for enjoying what God has given you and blessed you with. But he also gives that warning to remember. Everything that we have from God, we're accountable for. We will give an account one day. Know this, that for all these things, God will bring thee into judgment. There's a little saying that I heard a minister saying years ago, I'm going to write it here, that has stuck with me. And I think it's good to think about. For those maybe that are back pretty far, show me your friends and I will tell you your future. It's not 100% probably. But as I look back on people I knew and as I look back on my own life, I think there's a lot of truth to that. Show me your friends and I will tell you your future. Youth, there is so much potential. And there's just a lot you have going for you as you think of the vigor, the energy, the time of life you're in. But the reason it's so critical is that the friends you make indicate your values, the direction you're thinking of going. Now, praise the Lord, sometimes people have been caught in bad circumstances and made wrong choices and have turned around and came back, and God can still bless. God, we believe that, and it has happened. But often those ruts we start thinking and start walking in become harder and harder to change. And as we choose friends, their impact has such a tremendous effect on your life. I think of when I was growing up in school, there was a family coming to church that lived a little ways, probably, I'm going to say 40 miles, maybe more, 45. It's what I remember. We enjoyed being with the family. They had boys my age. We spent time visiting them. They were coming, they attended church, but the children, because they were far away, the father said, well, they can just go to the public school. He said, I came through public school. He said, I believe my children can make it this too. So we grew up together, saw them at Sundays, sometimes visited in their home, they visited in our home, we were good friends. Of course, we moved away, and just a couple years ago, I was back there to visit. I saw one of the boys just a little older, and you hear, I've heard some, what's the happenings of the rest, but basically, I saw the parents, they looked about the same as when I left 30, 40 years ago. But the children, I think the oldest girl is divorced. Some of the younger boys, there's a couple of them maybe in a conference setting. Some of them are no longer in any, my understanding, in any church setting. And And I wonder, you know, what happened? And I don't know all the details, but obviously what happened, there was friendships made with the unbelievers, with the ungodly, that affected their choices. And they chose to go that way instead of finding their lot with the people of God. The tremendous impact that those we grew up with bear on our lives. That is why we as parents are concerned where we find our, where we place our families, where we find ourselves in a church setting, where we go, where our children go, where they find friends and where they don't find friends. Another thing, which we'll hopefully spend a few minutes at, is your finding your life's companion is part of this here saying. You'll find friends and it will indeed affect your future. I remember too in Bible school, Brother Dallas Whitmer was a teacher, and we had a, well, maybe I didn't even say the title of the message this evening. The title is Youth Preparing for Life. Youth Preparing for Life. But we had a subject, might have even been the title of our subject, I'm not for sure on that, one class I took. But one of the things he stressed pretty often to us is that we prepare for life by preparing for eternity. We prepare for life by preparing for eternity. And that is so true. We have a goal in mind. We're looking ahead. Where do we want to get to one day? And then we make choices that we will be in line to help us there. Again, youth is a time of tremendous energy. You'll never be a time in life, probably, a healthy youth will never find another time in life where he's as healthy and as vigorous as now. Not generally, at least up until you're in your 20s. It seems like by and large, it's been observed that from the mid-20s on, your body is slowly going downhill. And you may not think about it much, but from experience, and I've heard others say too, probably by the time you're in your 40s and 50s, you will feel a difference. It's just not the same. I can't run like I used to. I can't work all day and have the same energy in the evening to keep doing something else. It just doesn't feel the same. And I don't necessarily complaining about that. It's just the facts of life. You're in a time of tremendous energy. There's also a time of change. You know, children, we see them growing very quickly. The what they learn in what the first 7 years is said to be some of the most crucial. Now, it's true, you learn a lot, but you're learning so much in those younger years. And there's just a lot of change that youth go through. You come to the age of accountability and you sense a need. You feel guilty. We call it the age of accountability. You no longer feel at rest and safe and secure with your parents or in their care. You just feel like something's bothering me, something's wrong. I feel like, you know, I used to enjoy hearing stories about God. Now I feel more afraid of it. It's because the Spirit of God is working. So there's a change that comes about, a restlessness, a guilt that God wants us to find rest in Him again as we turn our life to Him and repent and commit our all to Him. There's changes as through the adolescent years, as we tend to grow and mature. We develop friendships. You know, school is a time of great friendships. And as you grow older, these friendships can either deepen or sometimes they're torn apart. Sometimes, especially for the boys, it's a time of finding, you know, work. Deciding, well, I'd like to try this occupation or I'd like to try that. They have some interest. They want to find themselves there. Sometimes we can feel very self-confident, especially a very healthful young person. There's nothing they can't hardly do, it seems. Sometimes we might feel even indispensable because of the contribution we're making. Youth often are affected by peer pressure, and I've often thought maybe more so, but I don't know about that. I think us as adults many times are affected by peer pressure too, but probably the reason it seems like youth are affected more is because they haven't maybe seen where things go or seen the outcome of some peer pressures like maybe us as adults have. And so sometimes this pressure that well, you know, most of my friends are doing this, so that's where we need to go. It's what I need to do. And then it changes, and it's over here, and then it's over here. And well, just remember, there's a lot of pressure put on you, and yet, well, we'll talk about some of that too. We want God, the pressure that God, it's not really pressure, but it's simply God's will, is what we want to be more concerned about. Sometimes there's disappointments, friends that we looked up to, friends that we were sure would never let us down. We realize they were human. There was failure there. How to work through that? Or sometimes we feel like we can never be good enough. We're left out. There, others, our friends, are always the life of the crowd, and we're just a nobody. And you know, they can all do things better than us. That's another side sometimes we find ourselves in. We understand from these verses in Ecclesiastes that God has planned. God is, I think he's created humans to enjoy his creation. I don't think there's anything wrong with being a happy youth, enjoying what the blessings God has given you. Now, where it becomes wrong is when we heap it to ourselves and we're just trying to get out of life what I can get out of it for my own benefit. But rather, as people, as youth, see their need of the Lord and turn to him and then find their life in service for him and in helping others and being of use in God's kingdom, I think that's what God has intended. So often in the strength and health that youth brings, it's easy to forget about the future. And I found it this way. You know, when I was in my teens and 20s, sickness was something foreign almost. Once in a while we get a little sickness, but overall we just woke up and expected health to be there, and you did the normal things of life, and we really enjoyed life. And but when we realize, you know, you see youth maybe caught in an accident, it helps us understand, you know, it can change fast. Or maybe a youth that is not blessed with health like we are, it helps us realize it can be quickly changed. It's not necessarily for everyone. God has arranged things differently for some. Or maybe someone is taken in their youth and a life is snatched out. Or maybe there's a disease that impacts a life and they slowly waste away. It helps us. Those are reminders that life is fleeting. Someone has said, live as long as you will, but the first 20 years of your life are the longest. Live as long as you will, but the first 20 years are the longest. I don't know. I would say that's pretty true. I remember, here it is, what, just a few more weeks, 8 or 9, I'm not sure, till the end of school. When I was in school, it just seemed like those 9 months were a long, 36 weeks was a long time. It just seemed like it, not that I didn't like school, but it just seemed like the days, the weeks were long, and the months, and finally spring came and the end of school came, we could be at home for the summer. Of course, then we looked back to going to school in the fall again. Then when I found myself in the classroom, it went faster. It seemed like we couldn't get our week's work done that we needed to get done. And now that I'm older yet, and you know, the children just started school, and then we had Christmas vacation, now they're planning the program, it's about over. It just seems like time is rushing by. So those first 20 years, I don't know, do seem to be some of the longest years of my life. It's partly because we don't have the responsibilities, we don't always have as much that we have to do. You have more free time, you have more. Maybe you can get it done faster than we can because you're more energetic. But I think as responsibilities increase, then time seems to run out. God's wisdom, godly wisdom, helps us to see life in that proper perspective, realizing that, first of all, whatever God has blessed us with, we will give an account to him, and we live life in that perspective. We also realize whatever we have is God's. And then we realize, too, that whatever we have is a gift to use for him, to help others, not just to build my own tower, not just to build what I think will be something that will make me great and others will look up to. Back in 1 Timothy 4, I'd like to look at that verse just a little bit. Again, Paul instructing Timothy. First Timothy 4, verse 12. Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, and faith, in purity. Very brief and yet a lot there. Let no man despise thy youth. Don't give occasion for others to say, if that's what Christianity represents, you know, I want nothing to do with it. That's for all of us. But like I said the other evening, you youth leave a tremendous testimony, either for the Lord or not for God. Don't give occasion for them to say, you know, well, that sure doesn't look like what I thought the Mennonites were. But rather, you know, what a person that's obviously a Christian. That's what we want others to see. Paul was instructing Timothy here to, apparently he was a young man, but using that time in youth to serve the Lord faithfully and to use that service in helping others. Do nothing to bring a reproach on the name of the Lord. And in society around us, and sad to say in many Mennonite circles, there's just an understanding that youth will sow their wild oats and boys will be boys and girls will be girls. And, you know, someday hopefully they grow up and settle down. That's not at all biblical teaching. It's a very poor understanding of life. Use your energy in youthful years to form good habits, not bad habits. That is what we're instructed to do. Because I want to tell you, habits are not easily broken the older you get. It becomes more and more entrenched and harder. But by the grace of God, we can still overcome. Remember that. And again, always remember that your life, however young, can still leave a great testimony of God working. It doesn't matter how young. He says, first of all, notice that first thing, be an example. Well, if you're an example, then others are actually looking. We don't really think of an example where no one's following, no one's seeing. That thought of an example, whether it's however young, we're not necessarily setting an age for youth this evening, but from older childhood to young adult. That thought in Strong simply has a thought of a stamp. You know, we have these, I don't know if they still use them, but I remember years ago we used to have some of these stamps with our address at home. And so you stamp the ink pad and you stamp it on the envelope and that says our name and our address. Sometimes businesses will do that. But it's a stamp of what we want, well, what we are, our name, our address. It's there. He says, be thou an example of what? Of the believer. Be a stamp of God's children, of the child of God that is following God. Style or resemblance would also be given there in that thought of an example. A resemblance of the believer, of the child of God. Life is my opportunity to serve, not to be served. What do others see when they look at my life? What do you want others to see? You know, sometimes it's can be two different things. You know, well, I want them to see I'm a Christian, but then sometimes what they see, we fall short. That's, again, a challenge for us. Again, I think there's a lot of faith. I want to just say right now, in case I forget, I appreciate the many faithful youth that we have in our churches. I'm blessed by the dedication that I see. Is it everyone? No. I wish I could say that. But I do appreciate the many that we have and are blessed with. Sometimes I think they're a lot better than I was at that age. Okay. Another thought that I remember from Bible school. In fact, some of my thoughts here I still have in my notes from Bible school. And if you have Young people, if you take notes, save them. They'll be a tremendous blessing one day. You'll look back and wonder, you know, that's right. But one thing Brother Dallas said, every Christian must be self-sacrificing or he will become obnoxiously self-centered. Every Christian must be self-sacrificing or he will become obnoxiously self-centered. And that is something we do well to remember. It's hard to sacrifice. You know, well, we had our plans this evening. We had the things we were going to do Saturday. And now they want us to sing at the home, or they want us to go chop firewood for another family, or help clean up. And just remember, you'll have time for that. You'll have time for your own things. Do the things you're asked to do. Do the things you're called to do as much as possible. You'll find a lot more enjoyment there than being stuck on your own things. He says here in word, be that example of the believers in word, which again, as Strong simply says, something said or thought or our reasoning. It's more what you hear coming from our mouth. What comes from young people's mouths? Well, words. Sometimes right speech, sometimes wrong speech. Sometimes godly speech. Sometimes we hear some of the influence of the world coming out. What is it that wants us to use the slang of the world? What is it that wants to use what we call, you know, the innocent byword? It's not really swearing, but it's unnecessary. Are we tempted in that? Our speech reveals a great deal about our thoughts. Be careful with our words. Again, how kind are they? Kind are they? Were we sensitive to another's feelings? Are they caring? Remember, Jesus said, "We will give by our words. You know, we will give an account. Every idle word that man shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment." And again, the tone, the way we speak. You know, we can speak the right thing, but you can tell someone you love them, but it'll carry. You can say it in a way that they know you don't. It's kind of like our children when we help them say they're sorry for hitting their brother. And, well, they're willing to say sorry sometimes, but it sure isn't from the heart. We have to help them. And we probably need that too in our growing years. Well, in conversation, be thou an example in conversation. This word here is more related to our behavior. Word is a thought of our speech, conversation is more our behavior. What are your actions saying? Do they line up with what you're speaking? Does it change when you're with certain friends or you're not with certain friends? You know, that's a bad sign. You know, a sign of peer pressure probably, but I won't do something when I'm with, well, the minister's children. But, well, depending on who it is, yeah, I might go there. That's not consistency. That's not an example of believers in behavior. But how do you respond? What about when mom and dad are not looking or not around you? Does it change? That's not a sign of maturity. Be an example of believers in charity. And this is just basically love and affection. In your display of care, of love and affection for another. You know, a lot of young people, a lot of children have grown up in the world today not knowing anything about love. And yet we are so blessed to be brought up in godly homes where there's love is shown. There's care for each other. You've been taught to love others. Be careful in your diet of what you read and what you study, especially the fake love that is around, the lust that the world likes to portray as love, the violence that the world likes to think is just part of our lives. Again, the selfish greed, it results from that. Be careful in books that we feed on, that it doesn't change our view of what God expects from us. Sometimes, again, in youth, we despise others. It's easy to look down. You know, well, we'd hate to be like that. But remember, it's God that has given us what you have. If he has given you a blessing, a lot of abilities, it's the gift of God. So we owe it to him to be faithful. Be an example of believers in spirit, our mental disposition. Are you known as moody? That's what mental disposition. I don't know, sometimes we just hear of someone that we refer to as a grouch. It's It's not kind, it's not nice, but sad to say that's what we seem to sense. Let's not be a moody person. Or are you known as, you know, always one extreme to the other, extremely joyful and happy, and all of a sudden, next day, it's just life's just a dump. Life's just terrible. What is our mental disposition? What is your attitude about life? How do I respond when life changes and my plans change? And how do I respond? How do I respond when I'm asked to do something I really don't want to do? All of us have had that experience. Can I do it cheerfully? Can I do it as unto the Lord? Can I simply obey because it's my calling to obey, whether it be parents or those authorities over you? Am I dependable? Well, I think I'm getting ahead of myself. Be thou an example, believers, in faith. This is basically, Strong's refers it back to a moral conviction or a persuasion. Is my faith anchored? In other words, this is God's commands. This is what I'm called to do. How can I do this great sin and sin against God? Be a Joseph. Be a faithful maid. You know, God could take care of this problem. In other words, our minds are focused on how we're looking life through the eyes of how God would want me to view life. Is my faith anchored in God? I can't do this. It would go against my conviction. It would go against my God that has asked me to be his child. Can I withstand pressures? What others think, what others say, what they're going to say about me behind my back, and simply follow God? Can I keep that which is committed to my trust? Be an example in purity. That simply means a thought of cleanliness or a pure heart. Clean hands, not just moral purity, but a pure heart that is not defiled by the worldly lusts, by worldly attractions, by worldly fads, there's so much could be put in there, but a pure heart, a single eye vision. You know, we're not trying to focus, you know, well, I want to follow God, but I keep wanting a little bit of that stuff that I'm not supposed to have. Being single-minded, not double-minded. Abstaining from all appearance of evil, as 1 Thessalonians 5 tells us. Well, that's a great challenge for all of us, but especially youth. Remember the calling we have to be faithful to God. You'll never know how your life may impact another. The testimony your life may leave to another that maybe will never see you again. Just some points here that, again, from Bible school, as far as growing and maturing. One of the things that Brother Dallas shared was he gave 8 points for maturing as youth, as young people. One was learning to trust God as children trust their parents. Learning to trust God as children trust their parents. And children have a great trust, especially at a young age, in parents. You know, you stand them on a table and tell them to jump, most of them will just jump. You tell them, you know, go back to the bedroom, get that flashlight in the drawer. They don't doubt our word. They're pretty sure it's right there. Can we trust God that way? What God has said, it's right. It will happen. Excuse me. Number 2, recognizing that I need help to grow and be balanced. Recognizing that I need help to grow and be balanced is a very important part of maturing. Our tendency is to feel like, you know, I'm pretty good, I'm pretty mature, I have it all together, but realizing that I don't, and I'm going to need others' help if I'm going to grow and be balanced. Number 3, caring more what God thinks than what others think. And I believe this is a fact that we think about and carry with us, but again, in those times of pressure when you're in a crowd, sometimes it's easy to forget, but a sign of maturity is caring more what God thinks than what others think. And I'm glad we have positive peer pressure too. It's a blessing when we have Christian youth that we can relate to and are blessed with their input. But sometimes you will find there is There is a negative aspect there. Number four, denying my own rights and feelings and evaluating matters by how they affect common good and cause of the common good and cause of Christ. Denying my own rights and feelings and evaluating matters by how they affect the common good and cause of Christ. And that is, again, a very hard thing because we like what we like. I want to do what I want to do. But I must say no to the flesh. No, you know, others come first. God comes first, not and then others, then me. Jesus first, ourselves last, and others in between. But evaluating matters by how is this going to affect? I remember one hearing this too, probably read it somewhere, and you probably, but before you want to buy a vehicle, before you make another dress, buy material, or do anything, but ask ourselves, will this glorify God? I think it will, okay, then we're safe that far. Will it bless my church? Will it honor the church that I'm a part of? And then will it leave a witness for Christ? And it was said, if you can pass that test of those three things, you're pretty safe in moving ahead. Sometimes we're warped, because I remember asking a young boy one time that had gone to a rodeo, and I said, would you expect to find Christ there? And, yeah, I think so. Well, he might have been there. I'm sure he'd have been there with some tracks, but he wouldn't have been joining in with the crowd. That's a warped view. Anyway, maybe we should ask others, ask our friend, will this glorify God? Will this honor my church? And will this bless the witness of Christ? And then they could tell us better than we can ourselves. Number five here, being able to remain calm under stress. Now, that's easy to write down, easy to say, and yet it's probably a lifelong battle. Being able to remain calm under stress. But by the grace of God, I think a person, God gives the grace to handle things he allows. It may not at all be easy. It never is easy many times. But being able not to just lose it and fly off and just, you know, I can't deal with this. God wouldn't have allowed this if he was a caring God. But rather just remember, our God is in control, being able to remain calm under stress. Number six, learning to handle responsibility. Another sign of maturity, learning to handle responsibility. And we give this to our children as they get older. You know, well, this is your job. And if they're faithful, then we give them some more. That's part of life, learning to handle responsibility. It's a never-ending responsibility of life. Number seven, the ability to accept criticism and learn from it. And again, that is probably a very hard one. The ability to accept criticism and learn from it. Probably a battle all of us still face. But realizing that while they may not have said it right, we may feel it's just completely false. What can I learn? How can I respond rightly and benefit? Number eight, claiming and living by a set of true values and the ability to arrive at sound judgments. We mature as we claiming and living by a set of true values and the ability to arrive at sound judgments. The church needs young people today, true, holy, dedicated young people. We need your input. We need your talents. We need your energy. And again, God bless you for your faithfulness. Just a few thoughts here on maybe as you, if God leads to the friendship for a lifelong companion, and again, God can bless a person that's single as well as those that feel led to be married, to pursue marriage. By and large, most people find themselves seeking a life's companion. But again, don't feel that you're out of God's will if it seems like he's not led you there, or it seems like circumstances just haven't opened. Maybe to the young men, I do feel like there's, maybe when I was growing up, there was a tendency to predate. Probably we weren't mature. But I wonder sometimes today if we've gone off the other end and maybe we're waiting too long. I'd just like to encourage young men to think about it. Again, it's the work of you. Seek your parents' guidance. Seek the will of the Lord. I'm not at all pushing, but I think maybe we're waiting a little long. There's great blessing in, and I know some try and it doesn't work, and that really leaves a lot to work through. I'm not at all trying to be critical, but to me, if we're trying to put it off simply because I want to enjoy life as a single person, I really wonder if that's the right approach. Because I'll tell you, I think everyone I've met that has married, I shouldn't say everyone, most people I've met that have married have give a great testimony of the blessing of married life. And probably some I've met said they, if they had to do it over, they'd just do it sooner. So take courage. But first of all, as you think of courtship, focus on being the right person, on being the person God wants you to be. You know, we can run ahead and you know, well, I've got to, someone else might take her before I, you know, that was one of the worries I had. Someone else might take her before I, so I've got to run ahead and be the right person, find yourself in the will of God and trust God. I could have learned a lot. Looking back. But God blessed, I guess, in spite of my lack of maybe trust. Be a mature, stable, disciplined young person. One thing for sure, if you can't find happiness where you're at now, marriage probably won't fix the problem. If you can't find happiness now, don't expect that, well, I'm going to find it in this special person. In fact, too often, it just seems like when you get too... they say opposites attract, but I've seen sometimes where similar ones attract, disgruntled, and it just creates a lot of turmoil, a lot of havoc. A lot of two unhappy people get together. Well, they sure agree on one thing, that is what they don't want to happen. Or, you know, they agree on what they didn't like about some things in their past, and it just leads to a lot of turmoil. Don't think you can change the person by courting them either. You know, well, there's a few things I'm pretty sure she'll change if I ask her. Just be careful. That should be workable. But if you have some doubts about compatibility and you're pretty sure, you know, well, they'll change. Just be careful. It might be harder than you think. First of all, is the fruit of the Spirit evident? That when you're looking at, when you're contemplating looking, you want to make sure that, first of all, that the fruit of the Spirit is evident. Are they, you can, either side can ask this question, are they a supportive church member? And I think you need to be asking that question. If a young man or a young sister cannot support a church, be committed to a church, how are they going to be faithful in their commitments to a marriage partner? If they haven't learned submission early in life, how are they going to learn it when in the difficulties that come as you progress through life to their spouse? Are they finding contentment in their church? Or are they always pushing the edge and, you know, well, you look across and sometimes not that hard to see. Other times maybe we don't know, but just observe. Observe, listen, and watch. But are they content where they're at? Do they find happiness in their home, in their church setting? Are they eagerly filling their responsibilities? You know, they're asked to, the young man's asked to be song leader for a year, and all you hear is, you know, every time he gets up to, or every time you talk to him, they just can't do it. I don't know what they were thinking. Or maybe the young sister's teaching preschool or something. And observe how they're filling their responsibilities. How do they relate to others? Again, seek your parents' counsel. This is vital. Godly parents have a great deal of wisdom to impart. Now, in our society, parents generally don't choose, but it's good to maybe get their counsel. I'm glad necessarily we don't choose. I'm glad we live in a society where it is the young person choosing, but it still is good to get your parents' counsel. Place, again, a high priority on on a pure life, on a pure heart. There again, there's sometimes things can happen in the past that a person can repent and has lived a consistent Christian life, that we cannot necessarily go into the past and dig up everything in their past and say, well, you know, I can't trust them. But rather, is there consistent living? Has there been a pattern of consistent living? Pure godly living. Again, like I said the other evening, in your courtship, physical contact destroys the ability to think clearly, to reason, to observe. You know, we're there to observe and get to know one another, not to build on emotions. Choose your friend carefully. I guess I talked about that some again, but again, be careful. Maybe just a few thoughts here to the for you girls. Look at how he relates to his father and mother. That's a good observation. Is there a good interaction there? Is there an appreciation for his father and mother? Does he have a dependable job? In other words, how is he going to support someone if he works a month here and works a month there and goofs off a month? And I don't care how nice and good looking they are, it's going to be a problem if something doesn't change. Is that really what you want? It reveals a lot more than just the work problem. It reveals an undisciplined life. Can they stick to the hard things of life and just get it done? Is the vehicle simple, durable, practical, or is it just, it's the newest and the best and the... It reveals something. Possessions, are they kept in perspective? Money, maybe you don't know how much money they have, probably not, but you can probably see if they're saving or if they're just squandering. That's usually something we observe. Is he a gentleman? Does he let others go first, hold the door open, thank his mother for the meals? Those are things that tell us something. For the boys, maybe just a few things how you look to watch for in the girls. How does she relate to her parents? Does she appreciate her parents, an openness, a working together? How much time is spent on her appearance? Now again, you probably don't know all of that, but there's ways of observing and finding a little bit out. If you got to spend hours in them every morning, you know, before the mirror, I wonder. If we're always concerned, you know, about the a different dress than anyone else has, or everything just so-so and being different than everyone else. What's wrong with fitting in? What's wrong with accepted? Is she one that just emphasizes you see simplicity and modesty there? You know, again, well within what's expected in the church that she's a part of. Is she a worker at home? Knows how to sew? Knows how to cook? Now, some girls are better at this than others. I realize that, but things to consider. Willingly helping. Maybe she's a helper in the community, helping the young mothers, helping maybe the older that need help, caring for the elderly. It's all things that show character. Does she give up some personal ambition to simply serve? Well, again, set time for Bible study, discussions in your Bible study and discussions in your courtship. I think you should write some letters even. It doesn't matter if you're same community. I think there's value in the old-fashioned way of writing. For one thing, it takes time to think and put something out. And, well, what do I want her to read? So we write a little more, and we erase, and we write again. We live in a day when everything's fast-paced, and I think courtship, there's value in just slowing down and writing some things out. And then you can bring them back and read them one day and look at it. And maybe it'll humble us. Beware of the constant need to communicate. Do you have to talk every time you see her? Do you have to call her every day, text her? Oh, I'll just share. I feel texting can be a very, very detrimental to really coming to know someone when you're courting. But that's just my feeling, my opinion. Not saying it's never a need, but I think we need to be careful. Again, avoid late hours, long times alone. Just beware. Those are things that have caused trouble with people in the past. And the world looks at it as the normal. We look at it as maybe it's better to avoid that. Remember to interact with each other's family. Sometimes a couple, they're so caught up in, she likes chocolate pudding and I like chocolate pudding. And, okay, well, some more do too, okay? It's not just you and her. But we look on these little things, and we're just so enthralled by how much we agree on things. And we forget the families that you're going to be relating to if the Lord leads throughout the rest of your life. Get to know your girlfriend's family, and you as a girl get to know your boyfriend's family. That's who you will relate to. Help them in their work. Do the dishes in the house for them. Not just the necessary things that, I'm trying to make an impression, but just be there and help in the ordinary things of life. Discuss current issues, and don't forget your close friends. You know, all of you, I believe, as you're single today, have close friends. Keep the close friends. You're going to need them one day when you come down from this cloud that you feel like your own. You're going to realize, I neglected my friends, and they feel left out, and they feel hurt, and now I want them again. They're not sure how to relate to me. Well, youth, again, rejoice in your youth. But remember that we have a God to give an account to. We have people that are counting on you. You have people that are counting on you. You have younger ones, no matter how young you are, you have younger ones that look up to you and are following your example. So don't let them down. May the Lord bless you as you continue to serve Him and follow Him and grow. And God's plan, you'll find, will be the best plan for you. Let's stand for dismissal.